Welcome to Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time. For women who have walked away from faith, the challenges are often overwhelming, isolated, abandoned by family, misunderstood by partners, ostracized by friends, shamed for thinking critically, cursed for speaking out, subdued by the patriarchy. Thank you for joining us today as we provide a platform for women to speak up, to speak out, and to share their stories, because their stories count. Their stories matter. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and I'd like to welcome back today Jessica. And it's been a hot minute since we connected in our part one interview. I think that was probably even before COVID. Is that possible?
Yeah, I think there were rumors of it at that time.
Okay. And damn, the world has been a little bit upside down since we talked last time. I was hoping to be able to meet you in person for reals this summer, because you're like only a few hours away from me, but here we find ourselves. I'm still in Southern Ohio. You're still in Northern Ohio, and we've yet to been able to meet up because of the coronavirus. So that's on my to-do list in the future. So welcome back, Jessica.
Thank you.
Our first conversation, we finished up about the time that you and your Shabbat Israeli Jewish boyfriend broke up. Mm-hmm. And you were just kind of devastated, and it was kind of maybe the beginning of the end for your Christian faith. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd pick up right back there and then see where life took you from that point. How's that sound?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So how old were you at that time, at that juncture of your life when you broke up with him? Or he broke up with you, whatever happened.
Yeah. So I was about 19, 20 years old. And I had spent that year in Israel, and I ended up coming back. And wanted to start going to school since I had a better idea of what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to go to college fully paid already by my grandparents, by my grandmother's actually. My grandfather had just passed away and from Alzheimer's, from a battle with Alzheimer's. So I got that opportunity to go to college already paid for, and I didn't want to waste that. I was really into archaeology. I had done an archaeological dig when I was in Israel, and I was very much wanting to work on my Hebrew skills. Wow. So when I came back from there, I ended up going to Philadelphia to Temple University for my freshman year. And I ended up studying Hebrew with a Dead Sea Scrolls scholar, and she was a Jewish Israeli woman, and really amazing, and she really liked me for some reason.
I mean, how could anyone not
like you? Well, you know, and at that point I was, since I had background in working with both Jewish Israelis, Palestinians, Muslim Palestinians, and then also Muslim Israelis. Since I had that background, I ended up doing a lot of stuff that first year at school, kind of like international type of thing. So a lot of international groups. Conversations. So at that point, I was still a Christian, but I was very much less dogmatic about it.
Okay.
And you know, I was meeting people from all over the world again at Temple University. You know, like I had friends, I didn't hang out too much with white Americans. Mm-hmm. My roommate in college was that first year was a Black American. And she, like, to this day, I have nothing but fond memories with her. Like, she was just amazing. And so I was being exposed to, a lot of different people, you know, from Afghanistan and Pakistan. I was hanging out with all the, international students. Really just kind of trying, even though like I was here in the States, still really trying to understand people, mm-hmm. And not just the type of people I had grown up with, you know, white Christian Americans, right. But you know, people from everywhere with all kinds of different faiths, with all kinds of different, perspectives, and, which was just really an amazing, that first year that I was there in Philadelphia at Temple University was amazing. I ended up meeting my first husband there at Temple University. He did not go to Temple University. I actually went to there's that King of Prussia Mall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heard of that. Yeah. The King of Prussia Mall, and he was working there. And he, what do they call them? In the middle, they're not like an actual storefront, but they're right in the middle.
Yeah. Like a little kiosk.
Yes. Kiosk. Yeah. So yes. He was working a kiosk with, a friend of his. They're both Jewish Israelis. He really didn't know too much English, but I knew enough Hebrew. Okay. And, you know, and I was walking by and he's selling makeup and he like starts trying to get my attention. And I was like, all right, well, let's just go for this. So I started talking to him in Hebrew, which, you know, was really mind blowing for him.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the start of my very first marriage. I ended up having to, after my Temple University experience, I ended up having to come back to Ohio because I had a little sister that was going through a crisis mode with my mom and everything. So I wanted to come back here to Ohio to be here with her because she was living in an abusive situation, and her adopted dad finally got like full custody of her. And there was a lot of stuff that ended up happening that was really awful. So when I came back here to Ohio, my first husband followed me.
Oh, wow.
Followed me back here. And he ended up living with us.
Huh.
And yeah, with me and my dad. He ended up living with me and my dad for a little while, and then we found him a job at the mall with some other Israelis who were at, you know, at the kiosks, and we got married almost out of. He was supposed to leave the country, like his visa was up. And him and I, we wanted to still definitely stay together, but I knew that going back to Israel for me at that point was not an option. Right. And he wanted to stay here, and we loved each other very much. So we were like, well, let's get married. Let's do this. So I actually went through the whole immigration process with him.
Oh.
And got him, you know, we got married and we went through the system. When I got married to him, it was at in the downtown Akron, they have what is that building? Sorry, I'm having a brain.
The courthouse?
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's what they call those things. and my aunt showed up, but my grandmother refused. They found out that, you know, I was dating this Israeli Jewish man. He was not Christian. My grandmother absolutely refused to come. She ended up disowning me.
Oh my God.
Because, you know, I was getting married to this Jewish man.
Wow. So all based upon his religion. He was not a Christian man. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So, you know, and I had some friends there at the courthouse, and my stepdad was there. My dad was there. My stepmom was there, you know, like, I had a good support system as far as, you know, there were probably like a dozen people there. So, but yeah, my grandmother, she, and other family members, they did not agree with it because of, he was Jewish. And I guess in their minds, they're thinking that I am still, you know, still on the same page with them. At that point, I was like a really loose Christian at that point, you know. Yeah. You call me a very loosely. I was a Christian. I was starting, though, you know, like when I got back from Temple University, I transferred my stuff to Kent State University. So, you know, during this time when I was dating my ex-husband and dealing with my little sister and the abusive situation that she was in, I, you know, was starting my second year of school at Kent State University, and I ended up starting in the conflict management degree, taking all of those classes. I started taking an evolution course because I thought, well, why not? Well, the science thing, you know, growing up all in Christian schools, the science thing was muddled at best.
Not sure.
So I had ended up having to unlearn, and to this day, I am still unlearning a lot of stuff, a lot of so-called science that I was taught in Christian schools that is not actually science.
Right.
Which I love science now. Like I love it. I think it's fan fucking tastic.
The bomb. I love it too.
I'm all about it. like I've got all kinds of stuff in my house now, all about science. And anytime, like my daughter were doing the online public school with her right now, she's got science class. I'm there with her teaching and going through it all, and I'm learning right along with her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, absolutely love it.
Love it.
And I've been getting a lot of supplemental material. Anyway, so I took this evolution course, and it was making a lot of sense to me. And coupled with my experiences with other people, other religions, that kind of stuff, I just felt like there's a good possibility that I've been lied to. Yeah.
A hard-hitting revelation.
Yeah. But I didn't know who to talk to about it. There wasn't anyone I could talk to about it. Mm. So I was just kind of trying to process things on my own. I was very quiet about stuff, about what was going on. Once my husband and I got married and I, you know, and my grandmother had disowned me, my husband wanted me to think about converting to Judaism because, you know, I told him, well, you know, I'm not going to rule it out. And so he wanted me to really think about converting for real. So we actually ended up going to see a rabbi and talking with a rabbi. And and I started this process of converting to Judaism.
Wow.
And I remember very clearly there was a point where I was like, I cannot believe in this God.
Aww.
Because of all the genocide in the Bible. I can't do it. I don't know if I want to align myself with something like that. Right. You know, I had been through, you know, in Israel, I was watching genocide. And you know, it was 2006. So that was their war with Lebanon. And I had these experiences where there was just complete and total dehumanization of Palestinians, also from Palestinians to Israelis. Like, it's not a one-way street, obviously, you know, because I remember getting on buses there in Israel, and like, there are people that pray out loud or have their Bibles open, rocking and praying while they're on buses, you know, because there's been so many bus explosions.
Oh my gosh.
And I can remember, you know, observing this and thinking, whenever I get on a bus there, I'm thinking, okay, well, looking around at everybody, you know, like, everybody to me is suspicious.
All sides.
Yes, because the fact of the matter is that there's so much hate, and you know, and I'm certainly not going to sit here and say that love is the antidote, because I don't know if I really believe that. But from what I'm looking at, holy shit. So do I really want to align myself with this type of stuff?
And was your husband at the time, was he pressuring you?
Yeah, he was pressuring me. And, you know, I was also, probably 5 months pregnant. We had gotten pregnant like a month after we got married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember when I got pregnant, you know, I'd gone to see the doctor at Kent State University. They have their own little medical center there. And I remember the nurse saying, you know, she knew I was married, but she looked at me and she goes, you should really consider an abortion. And at that point, when it came to abortions, I was like real iffy. Like, why would that be the first thing that you tell me? I'm married. Right. Yeah, I'm young and I'm going to school, but why aren't there other options? So, now, with a little bit more clarity, I feel, and a little bit more experience, I understand why she asked that. At the same time, though, I don't know if I was a nurse, if I would be that brave to suggest such a thing.
Yeah. Radical. I mean, like, I am a nurse now.
Yeah.
But
right.
I'm not working with young women, but, that is a part of the healthcare that I am curious about and maybe interested in getting involved in. And yeah, I don't know. That was pretty bold of her.
Yeah.
Back in, I mean, 14, 15 years ago, whatever that was, 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me to be married, you know, I just didn't really understand. And, you know, and he wanted me to get an abortion too.
Wow.
And I felt really hurt by that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, abortions to Israelis are no big thing. I mean, they do it all the time, which is just one of a little bit of irony, but, you know. So, yeah, and that was really kind of like a really big turning point for me, going through, starting that process of converting and being like, I don't want to align myself with a genocidal God. I can't do it. You know, you can sit there and talk about as a Christian all day about the love of Jesus, but I'm sorry, man, like, does the love of Jesus include sending you to hell because you don't believe in him? Like, yikes.
So were you expressing that and those ideas to your hubby?
Yeah.
And what was his response to you?
I don't really remember. yeah. to be honest, because things were kind of rocky between us. He was a bit of a womanizer, and he was a gambling addict. Those were things that I was aware of before we got married. But, you know, standards change.
Yeah.
And it finally got to this point, you know, we ended up like moving to Maryland for a summer when I was pregnant, and things were really volatile. He ended up like, I was 6 or 7 months pregnant. He ended up like tackling me to the ground. Oh, wow. And I remember at one point I had to flee. He had a knife in his hand, and he was like chasing me down the steps, screaming at me in Hebrew, you know, I'm going to slash your tires. I'm going to cut the baby out of you, like all this stuff. God. And I just remember like being just ahead of him enough that I was able to get in my car. And as I was driving away, like he grabbed the windshield wiper to try and like, and tear it off.
Wow.
Really volatile, all of it. So I ended up like driving back to Ohio. He ended up coming back to Ohio. Like we ended up trying to work it out. We ended up getting an apartment of our own. It was kind of one of those things where we weren't ready to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Like we were more willing to deal with each other's shit.
Yeah.
Than to part ways.
Yeah.
Which obviously is not wise, but you know.
Yeah. And who wants to admit, you know, especially at that age for you guys, I would think, you know, like that they made a decision that was wrong. They made a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and plus I had been through so much. Don't forget, as a kid, all the domestic violence that I had been through, and like this revolving door of mm-hmm. family members, marriages and divorces, and everything was based on who was having sex with who.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I was able to tolerate a high level of shit.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was normal.
Right. Right. And you still did not have the tools in order to say no.
Well, yeah. I like there was no one that I could, like, no one ever took me aside and be like, you know, you deserve something better. Right. No one ever said, you know, I think you could do this without him.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff, you know. And so I was still going to school full time during all of this at Kent State University. So I was still trying to get my degree while being married, going through all that drama, and then getting a divorce. We ended up getting a divorce, and just a few months before we got divorced, when my daughter was a little over a year old, I ended up having, for my degree, my conflict management degree, I ended up going to Rwanda for about 6 weeks.
Wow.
My daughter was 10 months old at the time. So I had to leave her behind, but it was one of those decisions where I could either take 6 weeks and leave her in the hands of people who love her and who I know that she's going to be okay with. Or I could spend a semester barely seeing her because I'm trying to get my work hours right. in enough, you know, right. for this position. I don't know, to this day, I don't know what was a smart decision and what wasn't, because it was, I mean, going to college with a baby.
Oh my gosh.
To raise a baby is not an easy thing.
Right.
And I can remember, you know, like, there would be students in my classes who would show up, like they were hung over. They had like juicy on their asses and all this stuff. And like, and here I am like really, and they would like try to ask the professors for like an extension or something. And here I am with the kid just trying to graduate, you know, just trying to get through all of this. And I did not get that, you know, that college experience people right. talk about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just wasn't
in your cards, wasn't in your cards.
Yeah.
And you know, like my middle daughter just graduated from college at 21 in August. And she didn't have that either. Like she went to community college her first 2 years mm-hmm. and then she lived on campus her last year, but like, you know, not into any of that mm-hmm. typical community or college experience thing, yeah. you know? And I'm like, you know, you kind of feel badly like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't get that. But on the other hand, like, it seems like so shallow in some degree, like, oh, let's go out, party, get drunk.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but like, I know it doesn't have to be that way, but like, I'm yeah. kind of like, I don't think you really missed out on too much. I think it's yeah. okay. You know, well, but her experience is, and here you are at that age, raising a child,
yeah.
not having any family support or minimal family support, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah. I ended up having to, my dad, I ended up having to move back in with him after the divorce. And so it was me and my daughter, and we ended up moving back in with him. And his girlfriend at the time, who he had been with for like 10 years or something, mm-hmm. I ended up having to pay her to watch my daughter while I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I gave birth to my daughter, the following week was finals.
Oh my gosh. And so did you get an extension for your finals?
No.
No.
I did them.
Yeah.
I did them.
Badass beauty, Miss Jessica. Wow.
I did them.
Yeah. I was need to applaud your strength as a woman. I mean, like, look at you, like, you know, 20s, early 20s, young adult, mm-hmm. doing all the things, like showing up, being mature, being responsible.
Yeah, trying to, you know, it was not an easy thing. And, you know, I made some kind of shitty decisions, too, along the way, obviously. But, you know, once my daughter was born, I can really say that I knew that leaving religion, leaving the church mm-hmm. was the best thing because, you know, I got home with my daughter after the hospital and I had to go back into the hospital at one point after I gave birth to her due to some complications. And I, was finally home with her, and I remember carrying her up the steps when she was sleeping to put her down in her crib. And I just, like, I was so overwhelmed with how much love I had for her, aww. You know,
mm-hmm.
and just feeling like, how could anybody think that a little innocent baby is somehow full of sin?
Yeah.
And deserving of hell or it, like it doesn't it really solidified for me, okay, I'm making the right decision by leaving
yeah.
the church, by leaving all of it behind. Not only am I leaving a genocidal God behind, but I'm leaving a way of life that is just toxic, not just toxic for me, but toxic for my girl.
Yeah, for all women.
Yes. I didn't want to raise her like that. I didn't want to raise her how I was raised. Yeah. I really, really didn't. I don't know. I feel like I'm doing a pretty decent job right now. You know, my daughter's 10 now.
Yes.
She does not know her biological father. He's not in the picture. He hasn't been since she was like 2 or 3. Mm. And so the only dad that she's ever known is my current husband. Mm. And she, we really, he's an atheist too. I got lucky that way. And we've been able to let her know the importance of asking questions and always asking questions, being curious. Cause I, you know, like before me growing up, if I asked questions, it was met with like derision, you know?
Yeah, and you were down. Yeah. Yeah. Acceptable, Jessica. Yeah.
Yeah. Like asking questions. No, you're not allowed to. So, I, you know, really emphasize, I literally just had this conversation with her 2 days ago here on the couch. You know, she was asking me, you know, about sex and everything. And, you know, and so we're talking about stuff and I said, you know, at the end of the day, I just want you to feel like you have the freedom to ask questions and look for answers. And I said, that's, for me, the second most important thing. The first most important thing is consent.
What a beautiful conversation to be able to have with your 10-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you said, like my parents were not religious, but they didn't talk to me about sex at all.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a religious thing or not, but like what a healthy human response and conversation you guys were able to have. And I love, I mean, like I've been able to watch a little bit of your parenting, you know, through social media and like hear about some of the conversations that you have with your kids and some of the activities you do.
Yes.
And it is just beautiful, Jessica. So yeah, girl, you are doing a fabulous job raising those kids and they are lucky as hell to have you as their mom and providing an environment, right? Between you and your hubby where they are free to be themselves, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I mean, shitty, sometimes disrespectful, maybe rebellious, but hey, that they're not going to be turned away or they're not going to be silenced because they're curious.
Yeah.
And man, like I'm excited about not only like your generation, like changing things for the future of our country and our world, but like your kids' generation changing things for our society and for our world.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it gives me hope when in this world, especially where we find ourselves here during this pandemic, where so often I feel like there's not a whole lot of hope found out there. So so thank you for changing the narrative and changing the conversations with your kids. Like it's only going to make our world a better space.
I hope so. And, you know, and I think, at least when it comes to talking to my kids, I really believe in building resiliency. You know, all the shit that I went through as a kid, you know, all the domestic violence, all the abuse, all the shit from my mom, just all kinds of stuff. You know, it built a little bit of resiliency for myself. Yeah. Not that I want my kids to go through abuse.
Right, that hell.
No. However, I do want them to build some sort of resiliency. In the face of adversity, do you fold or do you stand up? Do you get through?
Yeah.
Do you find a way to try and thrive through the shit?
Yeah. And that's so hard. I feel like because offering that to our kids, because I feel like just as you're doing with your kiddos, we've tried to do with our kiddos, like most, even like when we were in religion, we were always kind of the different kind of religious people. But I find myself even now as all my kids are young adults, like wanting to dive in and like rescue them so that they're not hurting and they're not experiencing pain and that I can still come up with the answers for them to make life be easier for them.
Yeah.
Because it hurts like hell to watch our kids in angst and struggle. Right.
Yeah.
But like just the other day, there was a situation with one of my kids where I just, as desperate as I wanted to like, woo, dive right in and try to save the day. Cause there's something about that Jesus Messiah complex.
Oh yeah.
That, right.
Yeah.
And like, no, like Leah, stay seated, get on your ass, let them, they have to figure this out. And so I am a little concerned. I mean, I'm learning still as a parent, right? But like that, because
that ever ends.
Yeah. Right. But like, because I mean, I'll speak for myself, but because mm-hmm. I have tried to make my kids' lives so much less dramatic and trauma filled than what my own childhood was,
that
it's going to be harder for them to be resilient and to be able to be in difficult situations and be able to overcome. Yeah. But like, they have to, you know, they're going to have to figure it out. And like, my kids that are all young adults, like the consequences now for decisions they make are potentially so much greater, right, than when they're 10 or 8 or whatever. And like, it's parenting, god damn it, it's fucking hard as hell.
Yes,
who decided this was a good idea to have children? Shit. Well, yeah, so I love that you're having those conversations with your kids.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm grateful to have them. They certainly were not had with me when I was a kid. And I am hoping that it'll at least give them a little bit of a guiding starting point in life. For me growing up, I had most of my needs as far as physical needs right. met most of the time. But there was a lot that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Despite all the money and all of that, I mean, going through the abuse and the trauma, the domestic violence, all of that. I don't know. It doesn't escape class, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously class can make things a little bit easier and, you know, having some money, can make things easier as far as you don't have to be worried about where your next meal is coming right. from. But you know, there's still some struggle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after, once I was able to graduate college, mm-hmm. You know, I graduated and my daughter was, how old was she? About 2 years old.
Aww.
2.5 or so. And so, you know, I got to graduate with, you know, I came down off the stage and picked her up in my arms and it was awesome to know that I was able to do this. Now, listen, I fully acknowledge the privilege and all of this. I didn't have to work because my expenses were already paid.
Mm-hmm.
I fully acknowledge mm-hmm. that my situation was not normal. Even in a situation where, you know, someone ends up having to raise a kid and do, you know, while going to school, right. you know, there was absolutely privilege here to be had.
Yeah.
So I could not, I have a hard time imagining it being any more difficult than it was.
Right.
But I know that it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that it is for a lot of people.
Yeah. And like, how in the world do they work a full-time job? You know, there's this in my nursing, I just started my job this week. And there is someone in my new job who just graduated from nursing school, continued to work full time
mm-hmm.
while going to nursing school. Now, no kids involved. Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, how in the world did you do that? So yeah, what some people are able to accomplish, you included, is just beyond me. Like, I don't know if I have that within me, if I don't have food to be able to provide to my children, I don't know. I'm not strong enough of a woman yet. I don't think I would be able to make that happen. Yeah. So kudos to you, girlfriend. And that your acknowledgement of the privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah.
Well, you know, I spent 6 weeks in Rwanda and it was for a human rights commission type of mm-hmm. thing. And I was meeting with other Rwandans who had the same human rights hope for their country. Mm-hmm. And very much learning from them, they're learning from us. I ended up working with an indigenous nonprofit organization there in Rwanda. There's a specific group of people. If anyone has any familiarity with Rwanda and the genocide in 1994, yeah. there was the Hutus and the Tutsis, and the United States did absolutely fuck nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you've got a million people dead by machete in a 100-day period. And the country is absolutely devastated. And, you know, and it's very slowly trying to recover from all of this. And they're trying to find a way to rebuild their future together. And talking about forgiveness. And they have like these gachacha courts where people will try to get some justice. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who was a neighbor who tried to kill them did whatever. So, I mean, it's a very messy, this stuff is messy. It was really eye-opening for me, and I ended up, this is while I was still married. Okay. Wow. So, I ended up, and my daughter's 10 months old, and I ended up, meeting a Rwandan man who was my interpreter, who was absolutely an amazing human being, you know, had been through this genocide, had survived it as a kid, you know, growing up on the streets and so forth. And he somehow ended up caring about me. I don't know how he ended up caring about me. He just did. And it was very much mutual. We very much loved each other in that 6-week period. Mm-hmm. And he sat me down and he said, you know, I had told him about my situation at home. You know, my husband was a gambling addict. I had already kicked him out of the house. He knew that I was going to file for divorce as soon as I got back. You know, but he had our daughter during this time, mm-hmm. Taking care of our daughter while I was able to do this right. stuff and work with the indigenous population there in Rwanda, just trying to get some perspective and some mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't do shit for anybody. Yeah. I can't. And he sat me down and he said, you know, you're a lot stronger than what you think, than what you give yourself credit for. And he said, I know that if you decide to leave your husband, that you're going to be able to do it. And he was really the first person who woke me up wow. and spoke truth and life into me.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to get to me in a way that nobody else had.
Wow.
You know, I don't know. He shared a little bit of his strength with me.
Yeah.
You know, once I came back from Rwanda, I did exactly what I told my ex-husband that I was going to do. You know, I started the divorce process, all this stuff. So, you know, and once I graduated, I had a hard time finding a job. Mm-hmm. I ended up working at an electric company for a few months, and that ended poorly. I ended up speaking out about my extremely racist
oh, gosh.
coworkers, and I got in trouble for that. So I left that company, and I've been kind of floundering. Just really floundering. And I dated a lot of people. I was really wanting to explore my own sexuality. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you know, that was just not something you did. You know, for like the first 19 years of my life, it was just not something that was part of me that I had to ignore, you know. Or, you know, and I can remember, like, as a teenager, you know, if I masturbated, I'd end up crying myself to sleep. Yeah. I felt so guilty, so awful. What, because I used my body.
Right, in a way that it was designed, or not designed.
Right. So it was really, you know, trying to both raise my daughter as, you know, as a single parent, work, but then also date and explore my sexuality.
Yeah, that's a lot. Discover who you were.
Yeah.
Outside of religion.
Yeah, I would like to say that I found out who I was before I had kids, but no. I think for me, my kids very much shaped who I am.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. One of my brothers got married later in life, and I just had the privilege of like spending a week with he and his family up on the Cape. And they're older parents. Mm-hmm. They're not super old, but like, I'm like, that is such a beautiful space to be in, because they were able to work through some of their shit and like grow into healthier humans prior to raising their kids. Right. And I was like, there's something super special and healthy about that too. Yeah. You know, now they're going to be old. They're going to be old when their kids are, you know, older, but like, it was just beautiful to watch them have some shit already figured out as they're parenting. And
it's probably pretty intentional too.
Exactly.
I am seeing the benefit more and more of being intentional
in
the things that I say and the things that I do. Because I sure as hell didn't before.
I know.
So it definitely is a learning thing.
So through that time, you felt like you found out a little bit about who you are as a woman, as a human. Yeah. And then you met your second current husband.
And I dated it was hoe season. Like,
good for you.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
I really wanted to figure things out. I really did. I not only just sexually, but also what it is that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I know that what you want changes.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen to that.
Like, just because there's something that you want when you're 20 doesn't mean it's the same thing you're going to want when you're 30.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think just for purposes of marriage, giving people the space to change and find out who they are, giving people that space is really going to be important. And then just rolling kind of with the punches.
Right. You know? Right.
So I did my hoe thing for a little while and had a lot of fantastic experiences. Had some really shitty ones that included I had been punched at one point. And that kind of stuff. You know, you learn. Yeah.
Right. You develop boundaries and perspective. You know who's safe and who's unsafe. And It's a learning process.
It definitely is a learning process. And like I said, this is all stuff that I grew up with before. So maybe I should have been more aware, except for me, like this stuff was still normal.
Yeah. And
to me, it still is normal. Like not normal in my daily life, but normal in that this stuff happens and we've got to find a way to deal with it.
Right.
We can't just continue to ignore we can't continue to ignore domestic violence. We can't, we've really got to be more intentional.
Yeah.
So I did finally meet my now husband. We've been together for only 7 years, but we have, we had a kid together. And I had gotten pregnant like 6 months after we were dating because this is just how it happens.
Wait, what? No.
Yeah. And I had already started having some health issues, during these times. And I had already felt like my time was kind of limited anyway. Mm. And then, I can remember having this conversation with my husband now, before we got married, before I was pregnant, as saying, I think getting pregnant would be a bad idea because I feel something in my body is not right.
Wow.
And shocker, there was definitely things not right with my body. I ended up having my son, Oakley, and he'll be 6 on Monday.
Aww.
And things, I'd like to say it's been a fairy tale since then, and it hasn't. Mm. Things are just hard. Life is hard, and it's messy, and it's shitty. And I think we just kind of try to find those moments where we can get some peace and some sanity would be nice.
It's kind of hard right now during this time.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like this pandemic is a good metaphor for my life overall.
Oh, gosh.
I mean,
you're living doubly. That means you're living in a double pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, this pandemic, I've been pretty resilient through it because I already have been living through my own, through my own stuff. When my son was born, my husband was on third shift. So I was pretty much like just trying to get through my days with my 5-year-old, with my newborn. And he ended up being really sick. And it was really hard. He would be bloody from head to toe with like terrible, terrible eczema. With my son, he was about 10 months old when we finally were able to figure out what was wrong with him. He had several food allergies that were causing this weeping, bloody, awful eczema where he was underweight. He was way behind developmentally. He was not sleeping. He was up almost all the time, just crying and upset. I mean, this was a really traumatic time. It was like a 8-month period where it would take 2 people to change his diaper.
Oh my God.
Because you'd have to hold his hands down to keep him from scratching everywhere.
Aww.
And it was really kind of awful. It was just really, really awful. It was really hard on our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And even though my husband is atheist, he was still extremely misogynistic.
Mm.
So, the woman's place is in the home. Right. He still expected his dinner on the table at a certain time, all that kind of stuff. And there was just no way that I could try to feed my son while cooking dinner, while attending to his constant needs and my daughter. Yeah. And so it created a lot of marital strife. Mm-hmm. And there would have been plenty of times in the first 4 or 5 years of marriage. There have been plenty of times where we wanted to just call it quits, because it has been one thing after another. Like, and when we finally got my son figured out, then I started having some really serious problems. Mm-hmm. And going to the doctor all the time, and then that doctor telling me that things were fine, or that I'm just a young mom and I'm just tired. Oh. And it's just postpartum, and it's just this, it's just that, it, you know, like there's always another reason. Like, instead of running tests, right, to figure out what could actually be going on, it was just a continuous, it was like years of being told it was something else.
Yeah. Like you were kind of crazy and imagining.
Yeah. Yeah. That it was all in my head, that I'm just tired.
Oh my goodness. So how were you seeing like doctor after doctor and specialist after specialist to try to find an answer?
No. I was pretty much seeing this one doctor. And because she, even though like she was saying all that stuff, she was still doing some things right. And I felt like that was, at that point, I had felt like that was enough.
Yeah.
And then I had been put on some different medications to trial, like before any kind of testing was mm-hmm. done, and the medications weren't working. So if it's not the medications, then maybe it's your testing. You know, like maybe you need to expand your testing here a bit. Right. I ended up leaving that doctor and going to a neurologist at the Cleveland Clinic finally started my proper diagnosis journey. Just before I did go to this neurologist, I ended up being diagnosed from a GI because I had what I thought was a heart attack. So I ended up going to the ER. I thought I was having a heart attack. I was in so much pain, my chest. I had tears rolling down my face. It was almost to the point where I was unresponsive. And the doctor, as soon as you get, Cleveland Clinic is known for their heart stuff. So, I mean, as soon as you come in with chest pain, the very first thing, they're making you a priority and they are slapping everything on you. You know, you're completely filled with all kinds of lines and everything. Mm. And they were able to determine that it was not a heart attack, that it was probably a lower sphincter spasm. Mm. In my esophagus, I should say in my esophagus, not my ass.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yes. So I finally saw a GI a couple days after my ER appointment, and the GI got me in for a scope within a few days. Mm. And my scope showed that I have eosinophilic esophagitis. Mm. Which can be pretty painful. I apparently had it for quite a while, where I had rings and furrows in my esophagus. Usually the inside of your esophagus is very smooth and mm-hmm. it's like, it's a nice muscle and it looks beautiful and it's doing what it's supposed to. And, not mine. Huh. Mine had white spots all over it where the eosinophils had gathered. Hmm. And it had rings It looked like a cat's esophagus. I don't know if you've ever seen a cat's esophagus, but it did not look good.
And is that like a genetic thing, or is it due to like trauma and stress?
Yeah, so it turns out I do actually have a gene for it. So it's something that I watch for in my kids. Yeah. My son actually had a scope because he was having some trouble with swallowing and so forth, and he was fine, he was clear. But that's how seriously they take it. Like, once you're diagnosed, then they start looking at everyone else in your family.
Wow. Yeah, it becomes a big deal.
Yeah,
not crazy cuckoo, like, something actually going on. It has been going on.
Well, I thought that everyone could feel what they were eating. Like, I thought everyone, like, as it's going down, I thought everybody could feel. I'm not talking about like the hot cold thing that some people get, but like, it would get stuck in my esophagus.
Okay.
And then I would get these esophageal spasms.
Wow.
So that was like the first, once I got that diagnosis, I started meeting people who had other issues. Okay. And clearly I had literally 4 or 5 pages of symptoms.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It was so bad. Like, before I was diagnosed and put on medications, I was barely able to function. Mm. And it turns out that it was way more than one thing. And a lot of this, I think, stems from genes, but then also trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, from continued stress.
Yep.
I also had malaria and I had mono, and I picked up some nasty virus in Norway at one point. So, where I had been hospitalized.
Oh my goodness.
So when it comes to like the, it was like a perfect storm. Okay. I had stress and trauma all throughout my childhood. I had all the, you know, I had all these different, diseases and so forth, you know, the malaria and the mono and whatever it was in Norway. And plus genes. Okay. Well, here's your perfect storm of your body's going to be a shit show.
Oh my gosh. So that was how long ago? 4 years ago or not even?
When I was diagnosed, it was like 3 or 4 years ago with eosinophilic esophagitis. Okay, that was so, 3 or 4 years ago.
So what is your treatment to attempt to manage all of these symptoms?
So I started getting diagnosed with like, I got diagnosed with POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. I was diagnosed with gastroparesis. POTS, by the way, is a big one to look out for, especially being a nurse, for the autonomic nervous system. Your autonomic nervous system goes haywire, and you have to have it for at least 6 months of symptoms. And your autonomic nervous system is in charge of your heart rate, your blood pressure, there's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, part of the autonomic nervous system. And those are responsible for all the functions in your body that you never have to think about.
Yeah, right.
So my body was absolutely malfunctioning with dysautonomia. It is Dysautonomia Awareness Month. And POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, is a type of dysautonomia.
Huh.
Okay. And and it comes post-viral. So we're in a pandemic with the virus. Yep. So there's currently an influx of patients being diagnosed with POTS.
Wow.
After having this virus,
mm-hmm.
After having COVID. So just as a nurse, keep an eye out.
You can be my like anatomy and physiology professor.
Yes. Yes.
You do a way better job explaining that than they did. So I'll be on the lookout.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with gastroparesis, which is the stomach. not allowing food to pass through. Mm-hmm. So food will just like sit in your stomach for days and days while it just like essentially rots. And it's awful. It is so awful. I had a surgery for it a little over a year ago now, and the surgery helped, but I still get flare-ups. You know, I was being diagnosed with sleep apnea. I have orthostatic hypertension. So anytime I stand up, my blood pressure drops, skyrockets.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's not hypotension, which is pretty normal with patients who have POTS or dysautonomia. I actually have orthostatic hypertension.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like I said, the list goes on and on as far as what everything that is wrong with my body. The good thing now about having all these diagnoses is that doctors take me seriously.
Yeah.
So I have finally been labeled medically complex.
Wow.
Because I have so many conditions that fight with the other condition. Mm-hmm. And medications can be contraindicated sometimes for another medication that I should be on.
Right.
It's a balancing act. Like I'm on a heart failure med, not for heart failure, but to control my heart rate. My insurance company sees I'm on a heart failure med and like they're expecting me to die. You know, like within a couple years. So now they're like trying to take my heart med for away from me, but literally this is what I need to function.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So what does a day in the life of Jessica typically look like health-wise?
It's definitely taking my medications. My medications definitely help start my day off with some homeostasis. It helps balance my body out a little bit better. They are not perfect. there are some days where I don't know if it's my body that's responding to the weather or the temperature. I get these temperature drops where my temperature will drop to 94.5.
Wow.
And that's just part of having POTS, dysautonomia. And because temperature is another thing that your body regulates without you having to think about, spit is another thing, you know, any kind of fluids, you know, in your eyes, I have to get lots of dental work. So like I'm on my fourth root canal at this point, because, not having spit in my mouth causes dry mouth, and which is part of the autonomic nervous system. So as far as like a daily thing, I have to be really careful about things, and which is exhausting because I've got these two kids that I have to take care of. So right now, during this pandemic this year, they are both being online public homeschooled, which is obviously a bit different than your traditional homeschooling.
Right.
This is much more structured, which is what I need, because I cannot come up with material on my own. I don't have the time or patience for it, or the knowledge to be able to do so. So we're doing these online public school, and I have to school from the couch. Because I can't, getting up and moving around, I have to be very careful about where I'm expending my energy. There are certain responsibilities that I have to attend to every day. And I have to make sure that I have the ability to do that. There have been plenty of days where I haven't been able to. So my husband will have to come, he'll get home from work, and he'll have to step in.
Yeah.
For the most part, we've been able to juggle all of this. It's not been easy.
Oh, I can't even begin to relate to what you're saying. I have never felt or had that experience, you know? And so like, did the pandemic, like, cause everything shut down.
Yeah.
Most everything shut down. So how did that affect your health and like your regular doctor's appointments?
So I was getting infusions every week at the hospital, before the pandemic. And once this pandemic hit and things were shutting down, I went to my doctor, and I said, hey, we have got to do this home health care. So I now get home health care. I get my infusions at home, and my infusions are just to keep me hydrated. So they're just basically saline infusions. So they're not anything radical, except I have to do them 4 or 5 times a week. excuse me. Sorry. One of the hard things that I have a hard time with, is keeping myself hydrated due to gastroparesis and due to autonomic dysfunction. So the infusions, the saline infusions, help keep me out of the ER. Although I have been in the ER twice, since this pandemic has started, but, yeah, my healthcare has changed. My doctors are not as accessible to me as far as like trying to get responses from them. The good thing has been that they are doing telehealth appointments. You would think, for someone who has mobility issues, like I have arthritis really bad in my hips, and so sometimes I have to use a cane to walk. I also have small fiber neuropathy. So it can be painful. You would think that they had offered these services beforehand. They did not. So what the pandemic has essentially done is expose in a massive amount of ableism. It has been insane, the amount of ableism that has showed up.
It's gonna be a game changer, this telehealth. I have friends who started doing like therapy and like CBT therapy. Talk therapy, like telehealth, and like people I'm thinking of right now, like they probably wouldn't have gone or stayed as consistent in their appointments had they had to go into an office. No, it's just such a beautiful convenience aspect that it's amazing to me. In 2020, before this, we didn't have this set up to the degree. So I think health, it's changing. And well, I want to say hopefully for the better, but it all depends on who wins on November the 3rd. See what happens with our healthcare, but we won't go there right now. But yeah, telehealth, I think, is really going to change things up for us. That's, look at you. Like, you are Miss Sunshine. You, like, looking for the beauty or the good stuff, the optimism in the pandemic. That's...
Yeah, you know, and there really is so little to be had. there really is. There's just so you just kind of like grab onto it, and I've seen a lot of these things where they're like, you know, these families that are at home with their kids and they're chilling and they're enjoying their time together. Well. My God. For me, that has not been the silver lining in this stuff. The silver lining for me has just been, you know, these telehealth appointments and getting home healthcare finally, things that should have been available beforehand that were not.
So you make me think, okay, so how do you, I mean, as a Christian, how do you think you would have been able to, I don't know, not justify, but make sense of where all of these health issues that you're struggling through, like, was it was God's plan for you somehow, or you were the martyr that he called to live this difficult life? Like, how do you think you would have, figured that out or made sense of all this?
Yeah, I think, part of the, I was always told at when I was a Christian and I had some older adult mentors in my life. And I would tell them a little bit about the stuff that I was going through, the traumatic events. And they would say, well, God is using it as a platform for ministry. Get the fuck out.
Seriously. Shut the fuck up. Sit the fuck down.
Yeah. And I remember being jaded a little bit by it. I mean, I understood to a degree what they're saying. Like, we should be helping people. We should be using our story to kind of help other people along if the opportunity presents itself. But if you're asking me to be a good Christian about it, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And even as a kid, like some of these symptoms that I thought were normal, I had as a kid and no one ever took things seriously. And I can remember once, I lost my ability to walk because I was slain in the spirit.
Oh, wow.
Is that a symptom?
Oh, wow. A symptom of what? Being slain in the spirit?
Well, you know, like not being able to walk temporarily, you know, for like an hour and having to crawl to the bathroom. Yes. Is that a symptom of a medical condition, or is God intervening in the use of my legs?
Right. What makes more sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so today, so like today, as like, what do you define yourself as?
So I actually have a myriad of things that I like to use.
Let me hear.
So I just turned 33 a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And the significance of 33 is?
Jesus was 33 when he died.
Yes, ma'am. So I always kind of grew up thinking 33 was going to either be the year of my death or when my ministry would start.
Wow.
So I am 33 and now, and I am officially a minister. Oh, what are you a minister of? Well, yes, I now have my certificate, my minister certificate and my license here in Ohio, in the state of Ohio, as a minister of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Ooh.
So I have officially started my ministry at 33 years of age, as I always thought that I would.
Wow. It was a, what's that called? When prophets speak.
Right.
Or a prophetic, whatever. Yeah. Revelation you had as a child.
Yes. So I've got that going for me, I guess.
Damn, girl. So what can you do with that license?
I can marry people. I can give last rites. I can cast out demons.
That's super exciting. We need to talk.
Yes. it is, it's fun. So I'm looking for opportunities to really, try and do this, to use my minister powers. I can invoke the flying spaghetti monster now. And, so I really label myself as an atheist. I label myself as an anti-theist, which is really, anti-patriarchy.
Yeah.
When you get down to it, I am a secular humanist. I'm a skeptic. I'm a free thinker, whatever it is that those things mean.
I love it. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's something so freeing to being outside the cages, I don't know, the mind numbing cages, whatever, of religion. That it, you know what, and it really, you can call yourself whatever the hell you want to call yourself. You can just make up whatever shit you want.
I'm gonna make up my own church now.
And you can change it in the next hour if you'd like to. You know, it's like it doesn't really matter. It, which is so beautiful and freeing, and it's given me just this beautiful ability to say I don't know. You know, I don't know. And like, just to be able to continue to be curious, just like your little girl, your 10-year-old daughter, you know, just to continue to be curious about the world and try to figure about how it works and how it doesn't work. And I tell you, in the time in which we find ourselves, we need that. We totally need that. So our time is coming to a close, but there's a few, what about your story have we not covered that you might like to share?
Oh, I don't know, man. So I suppose I've probably exhausted your listeners at this point.
So. I don't think so.
I mean, I think if anyone who's listening to this is out there who really is struggling with any of the subjects that I've mentioned in these, 3 hours now?
And we could go on for a few more hours, I'm sure.
You know, if anyone's out there struggling with this stuff, you know, find me in the group. I'd be more than happy to talk with anybody about these things.
Yeah, that's cool. And the group that Jessica's mentioning, we do have a secret online Facebook group of women who have left faith. And so if you're interested in that, just message me and let me know, and I can put you in touch with Jessica. What advice, Jessica, do you have or would you give to other women who are struggling either after leaving religion or in, you know, abusive situations, relationships, illnesses that are day-to-day, moment-by-moment struggle?
I mean, it would be the same with my daughter, you know, consent. Consent and never stop asking questions. Just keep asking questions. And I've learned that the other flip side to asking questions is listening. Not just asking questions, but listening. God, that is hard. It's hard for me to do. I'm a wordy person. I don't know if you've noticed but I'm really wordy. But I like interacting with people who are real and genuine, and who put their cards on the table. Because I think we can come to some agreements on humanity that way.
Agreed. Okay, lastly, in the bio that you sent me, you mentioned this tattoo that you have on your back that you got after you deconverted. Okay, and this tattoo is a Bible verse. So, like, could you explain to us what's up with that?
So the my tattoo is in Hebrew, and I designed it myself, and the artist who did it had no idea what he was doing. And so my tattoo says, Elia Ahuvati Nahar Shel Hadam Shali Bikvesh Shalom Vivrad Fahu. And Elia Ahuvati is, Elia is my daughter. Elia, my love. Nahar Shel Hadam Shali is river of my blood. My half-sister, who is 18 now, her name is River. Our mom has done everything in her power to keep us separated. And it's been a really hard situation between my sister and I. I haven't spoken to her in a couple years because of some stuff that went down. But so when I got the Nahar Shel Hadam Shali, it was river of my blood, meaning river, my sister, but also Elia is a continuing of my blood, right? Bikvash Shalom Virad Fahu is in the Bible, in the King James Version, it's pretty loosely translated, I think, to seek peace and pursue it. Mm-hmm. In Hebrew, it's more like desire peace and hunt it down.
Wow.
And I really like the almost violence in that, yeah. Right?
Hunt it down.
Yes. Yeah. There's a really big sense of justice in it for yeah. me. And I'm a pretty justice minded person. Yeah. I think when you work with human rights, when you work in with genocide, mm-hmm. with victims of genocide, which is still ongoing here in the US. Mm-hmm. I think when you work with these populations that are marginalized you know, there's this justice, it's about justice.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but like your life story, you know,
yeah.
Like when I listen to you speak and share your story, God damn, I want justice.
Yeah.
You know, too. And so like, you know, you wonder, it's interesting that, you know, it's so easy for us to speak of like getting justice for others. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, so I don't know about you, but like for me, like I tend to put myself last,
yeah,
you know, and, but yeah, so like, yeah, you too, like yeah. your life and how subconsciously or whatever, right, under wraps that's a part of it too,
yeah.
being justice oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what it's like to have hate directed at me. I yeah. know what that's like. You know, I experienced it from my mother. I experienced it from my step parents. Mm-hmm. I've experienced it from different people throughout my life. And having that kind of hate going through people attempting to kill you. And that's something that I understand, at least on a little
yeah.
part, not on this massive scale right. that we see mm-hmm. in history, but at least on a little small part. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that sense of justice is very much with me. I know that it's not going to happen for me, but I can sure as fuck work for it for other people.
Yeah. Amen. I need to come up with another word than amen.
A fucking men.
Whatever the secular version of amen is, that's what I need to figure out, because yeah, a fucking men. Yeah. Well, young lady, it has been a privilege, and you are an amazing young woman, and you give me so much hope for the future and what you are doing and the freedom that you are experiencing and the battles that you are fighting and the peace that you are hunting down.
Yeah.
And then all of that strength and that beauty and that curiosity that you're building into not only your daughter, but your son too. Yeah. Because he's gonna, you know, he's gonna be a different kind of man because you have parented him.
If he doesn't get this through osmosis, I don't know. I'm gonna have to inject it into him somehow.
Yeah. And so I just thank you. I thank you for being a woman who was willing to ask the questions and stand up for what was right, and the woman who was able to find her strength despite the fact that you were beaten down time and time again. Like, I don't know what that is about some of us who are able to overcome difficult things, and others of us that do just the opposite and like can't find our voices, and we curl up into balls and yeah. and let the world overcome us instead of overtaking the world. But yeah. But thank you for being you and for making this world a better place. And goddamn, after COVID, I am taking a trip up to Northern Ohio.
Yes, I would love
it. And would love to meet you in person. Absolutely. And your kiddos and spend some time with you. So absolutely. Thank you. I hope that you have a good rest of your day health-wise today.
Thank you.
And I'll be in touch.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Peace, thank girlfriend. You. Thank you. Have a good rest of your day. Love ya.
Love you too.
Bye. Bye-bye. So y'all, what do you think about Jessica? Damn. That's one incredibly amazing young woman. And young women, like her, all women, but I'm just thinking about that generation of women, the power that they have to change our future. And it reminds me of this beautiful quote that I just happened to see like right before I went on with Jessica. This quote was posted by a woman that I've had the pleasure to follow on social media. She goes by PK Hill, and she is a woman who was abused by priests and nuns as a young child and as a teenager. And she's working on recovery and becoming her best self. And she fights on behalf of others so that their voices too can be heard. And anyway, PK posted this today on her Facebook page. It's a short little poem by Jasmine Cower. I'm not exactly sure how to say that, but this reminds me not only of PK and the strength that she exudes and offers to this world, but young women and old women alike, and women like Jessica scream so that one day, 100 years from now, another sister will not have to dry her tears wondering where in history she lost her voice. Again, Jasmine Cower. Jessica has not lost her voice. I lost my voice for a time, but I've been able to find it again. So thank you for listening today. If you'd like to get in touch with either myself or Jessica, you can send me an email at womenbeyondfaith@gmail.com or look for us on Facebook or Instagram at Women Beyond Faith. I can put you in touch with Jessica. And if you think that you might be interested in sharing your story on this platform, you too can share that with me at womenbeyondfaith@gmail.com. But thanks for listening, and thanks for being a part of making this world a better place. Appreciate it. Have a great day. Go vote.
Thanks for joining us today on Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time.